Warm greetings to everyone. Welcome to today's special episode of the Radio and Youth Podcast. It's me, Preeti Sakha, your host for the episode. This is our episode in the series of the podcast of the project Youth Leading Disaster Risk Reduction and Climate Action through Multimedia Advocacy, Resilience Now and Into the Future. This series is initiated by Sendai Stakeholders Children and Youth Group and Major Group for Children and Youth, MGCY, powered and hosted by the Youth for Environment Education and Development Foundation, YFED, with generous funding and support by United Nations Office for Disaster Risk Reduction. Today is our episode on United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, COP26, and the way ahead. The 2021 United Nations Climate Change Conference, being the 26th United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, also known as COP26, was held at Stick Center in Glasgow, Scotland, the United Kingdom, this year from 31st of October to 13th of November 2021. The conference was first held since the Paris Agreement of COP21, which expected the parties to make enhanced commitments towards combating the changing climate. The result of COP26 was the Glasgow Climate Pact, negotiated through consensus of the representatives from 197 attending parties. The conference ended with the adoption of less stringent resolutions than some anticipated. Nevertheless, the pact was the first climate deal to explicitly commit to reducing the use of coal. It also encouraged more urgent greenhouse gas emission cuts and promised towards more climate finance for developing countries to adapt to the climate change impacts. In order to address and combat the disasters which has become more frequent and severe due to climate change, many different side events and discussions were also carried out under the theme of loss and damage. We will hear more about the discussions and decisions made under these themes during the COP26 from our eminent speakers today, who had an opportunity to actively participate this year at Glasgow. So, here we go.
Hello everyone, my name is Irfanullah Afridi, and I am the regional focal point for United Nations Major Group for Children and Youth. And I am very happy to be sharing my experiences and my insight from the COP26, which held in Glasgow this year. So to start with, what was the issue of climate-induced disaster addressed during COP26? What was the topic of discussion under the theme of loss and damages at COP26? I think so, on the basis of my opinion, in this COP26, a lot of parties, civil society groups and youth, they emphasized and they were trying their best to have the operationalization of Santiago Network on Loss and Damage, which was an important, and especially the youth were also focusing, and the youth were saying in advance, if we want to have this COP26 a successful event, so it would be a nice opportunity to have the Santiago Network on Loss and Damage operationalized. So there was a lot of push from civil society organization and from other groups like youth groups to have this SNLD operationalized, but unluckily it didn't went the way it was. But luckily there was a progress, especially in the loss and damages, and especially on this climate finance of $100 billion per year. And the success, you can say, was there was this achievement where in the COP decision, this Glasgow loss and damages facility was established, where which main focus will be to kind of cover the damages developing countries due to different disasters. So I think so it was the under loss and damage if we talk, so it was one of the achievement that we having this this facility called Glasgow loss and damages facility. The second question, what are major highlights in concrete decision made during the COP regarding loss and damage, and if they were sufficient to address the need and demands. So I think it's a good progress, and it's a good decision that now we're having this Glasgow Loss and Damages facility. But I think so just having this facility, I would say, is not sufficient to address the need and demand. So we really need now to operationalize, and we really need, and actually the developed country are those country are, we can say, the polluter, it's their responsibility to push for, and especially if we talk about climate finance, to somehow kind of operationalize this $100 billion pledges per year that we really need to see. And we would be happy, especially the youth, to see this funding somehow flowing to the developed countries to fulfill their needs and to somehow cover the damages that are done by these polluted countries. And the third question, was there any failure during the negotiation? I think that there was some drawbacks and failures, especially in the last days when there was a negotiation on coal phase out and phase down. Unfortunately, the phase out didn't work because of the late intervention from India. And so there was no this phase down, coal phase down instead of coal phase out. But there's also kind of long history why India did it. So there's also, we need to see, and we also need to see and look into deep dive in the reason that they did it. But overall, I would say it was a successful event, and especially if we talk about youth involvement, youth mobilization. So now there's an official paragraph on Glasgow Climate Pact about youth engagement. Our party in future would responsible and would need to have youth voices in their planning and negotiation processes. So youth were also really appreciated, especially on the COI16 and also on the youth statement on loss and damage. So I think that was a nice progress, and first time youth were encouraged while having a paragraph in the official decision of COP. The next question is, what were the major challenges that do you face in addressing the inclusive participation of youth and children? On my experience, I think so this COP was somehow more inclusive, where I saw a lot of young people on the stage in the different panel discussion, where youth were really on the front line and were demanding policy and decision maker that their voices should be heard, their voices should be included in all the planning and policy processes. But unfortunately, there was also some event where young people were not allowed, and there was also negotiation were going on where there was lack of youth. So this was disappointing for the youth around the globe. And so I think it would be really important to have more youth inclusion, more youth voices. And I also saw there was not enough youth participation from Global South because of the visa and this COVID situation. A lot of my colleagues, they also didn't get their visa from Global South. So I think so that was the disappointing for the youth as well. So these were some of the failure, I would say, and maybe some challenges there was in inclusive youth participation. And next question is, how have you planned to take stock of the decision and processes with children in youth engagement in issue? I think the most important was this global youth statement, where different working group put their demand in the front of a president of COP, Alok Sharma and Patricia, which were having a clear demand from young people around the globe here. It was like an intensive process of collecting the voices, and hundreds of consultation sessions were held with thousands of youth around the globe. So I think so that were one of the nice opportunity where youth present their voices in a very more effective way. And it's now important in the responsibility of the decision and policy and planning makers to have those youth demand addressed in their planning and policy processes regarding climate change adaptation. And the last question, what are your plans for COI18, COP26 next year in Egypt? So as we know, it's a continuous process, it's a continuous struggle, and I would say it's a continuous fight. So we really need to keep our momentum built on, and we need to kind of come up more like-minded people to more intensify our voices and to really, you know, move to have this work, the climate talk, no, that we, the youth, not just talk, but we also need to do something in our respective community, in our social circle, children in our vulnerable community. So I would say my plan is, especially if you talk about my plan for COVID-18, I really need to bring something more fruitful to the table, to the negotiation table, like some success story which we recently are working on, locally led adaptation measures to fight against climate change in some of the district back in my country in Pakistan. So I'm looking forward to share those success stories with the rest of the youth around the globe. And I would also suggest other young people to come up with something more innovative that we need to bring to the table, so that we can show it to the rest of the youth, and also to the decision and policy makers, that we the youth are not just talking, but we are also doing something on the ground. And here is the result. So yeah, thank you so much. That's all from my side.
Hi there, my name is Angela Zong, and I was at COP26 as a representative of Leaders Club. I was also a speaker at COI16 this year. And the issue of climate-induced disasters was definitely somewhat addressed during COP26, because I think that disasters are some of the more visible ways that climate change immediately manifests and devastates communities. Personally, I feel like it was not adequately addressed, because I come from Houston, Texas, which is often ravaged by things like hurricanes, and so I wanted to definitely see more infrastructure and mitigation and adaptation efforts around how we could address that. Some highlights and decisions that were made was about the phase down rather than phase out of coal at the end of the session, which caught a lot of people's attentions. I would consider this a failure during the negotiations, not only to decrease the amount of coal that is being used, but also largely of addressing the need of developing countries, effort economic advancement before they can consider things like climate disasters. And so I think that there needs to be a better balance between richer, more industrialized, or colonial countries giving back. Ways that I plan to take stock of the discussion and process it with is just simply speaking with other youth that I had the fortune of meeting at the conference. I understand and acknowledge that not everyone who wanted to go was able to due to problems like visas, restrictions, and hope that in future years this can be less of an issue. But I do think that I learned a lot from the other activists who were there and really appreciated the type of energy that surrounded the conference. Because I usually have things like school, I'm not able to constantly be thinking about things like climate change, but for those 2 weeks I was able to. On my way forward, I really hope to engage with COI18 and COP27 next year in Egypt, and hope that we can have a more transformative experience rather than just pushing everything off until the next conference. Overall, because this was my first COP, I don't have too much to compare it to, but I definitely think that there is room for improvement, and especially for more youth to be at the table. Thank you so much.
Namaste, I'm Prakash Lama, volunteering as a media coordinator in Nepalese Youth for Climate Action. Basically, my work is focused with social media activities to support advocacy and spreading awareness through the digitized arena. The issue of climate-induced disasters was raised by many nations at the COP26. Developing countries raised their concerns that they are facing serious climatic issues such as heat waves, massive floods, wildfires, droughts, and rising sea levels. They held developed nations responsible for the high emissions, and that they are additionally bearing brunt of climate change owing to this rising issue. Under the theme of loss and damage, climate change adaptation and climate finance were majorly discussed, but with zero action. Developing nations asked richer countries to contribute to the loss and damage fund and mobilize the climate finance for adaptation and mitigation activities, but it was pushed back by the European Union, United States, and some other rich nations. However, the Glasgow Climate Pact did agree to dedicate funding for the San Diego Network, which is responsible to build technical expertise on dealing with loss and damage in vulnerable countries. Some concrete decisions made during COP26 are the Glasgow Climate Pact called on 197 countries to present stronger national action plans for increasingly ambitious climate actions next year. Countries will submit a yearly report summarizing nations' annual commitments to reduce emissions. The Glasgow Climate Pact also called for the phase-down of coal and phase-out of fossil fuel subsidies. The developing countries agreed to double the funds for climate adaptation. The rulebook of Article 6 of Paris Agreement was approved, making the Paris Agreement fully operational, while providing a framework on carbon markets and emissions reduction through the exchange of credits. Developing countries need $70 billion per year for adaptation, and this figure is expected to double by 2030. These countries called for establishment of loss and damage fund from developed nations to compensate for the damage caused to them. But US and EU blocked the negotiations, and now the Glasgow Pact includes a promise for future dialogue to increase financial support for developing countries. There were multiple challenges in participation of children and youth. Availability of finances to fund the participation was a major hurdle. Then getting a COP accreditation was also a difficult phase. Young people were treated in the most tokenistic way back in their countries to help them participate at COP26. Due to COVID-19 travel restrictions, many youth participation faced delays in their visa processing and could not plan things on time, including there was a limited seats in the negotiation. I plan to continue working with YONGU, which is the official children and youth constituency to the UNFCCC, to educate young people on how to engage with observer organizations for COP26 badges. I'm also working with the youth coalition called Neptitude for Climate Actions to advocate policy and to spread the information on youth engagement in climate action activities. And this is not only empowers me to act for climate action, but also help others to claim their space. I will support COP17 with my expertise as an organizing member and being part of the communication team. Besides this, I'll continue working with youth constituencies to support for the youth inclusive and to intervene on the Nepalese youth agenda in the upcoming UN Climate Change Conference COP27. Let's unify for change.
Hi, this is Lamia Mohsin, and I'm currently working as a consultant for the United Nations Development Programme Bangladesh Office under the Resilience and Inclusive Growth Cluster. This was the first time I was attending a COP, and quite understandably, I was very excited by the experience that I was about to have. So, summing up my entire COP experience, I observed that developing countries brought a very firm and bold message to the COP summit, that they were suffering from a problem that they did very little to cause. And they proposed, among a number of agendas and a number of issues and concerns that were raised, that wealthier countries must compensate them for climate change related loss and damage. And loss and damage was a very debated topic in this year's COP, quite understandably. And at the summit, Scotland was the only country that offered to pay its first contribution to the loss and damage fund, and this was seen as a positive sign that could be followed by other countries as well. The developing nations argued that a COP26 agreement should establish a fund or facility to compensate for loss and damage. However, during the negotiations, the idea ran into a brick wall because wealthier countries, including the United States, refused to support it. And instead, the final compromise in the Glasgow Pact was that discussions called Glasgow Dialogue will commence between nations about how loss and damage funding might work. World leaders have met 26 times since the 1990s to chalk out complete climate agreement. And while COP delegates have called for increased use of clean energy, they have repeatedly shied away from explicitly calling on the world to stop using fossil fuel. And this has been one of the biggest failures of this year's COP, that the legacy of coal-fired emissions continues.
Although most countries pledged to keep the 1.5 degree limit alive, combinedly, these pledges will not reduce emission fast enough to keep the world within the crucial limit of 1.5 degrees Celsius by 2100, as agreed in the Paris Climate Talk. Instead, the world is expected to be on track for 1.8 degrees Celsius of warming. This year, a number of countries, including the United States and Japan, announced new climate finance pledges, but the 100 billion goal of climate finance is still elusive and is not likely to be met until 2022 or 2023. And a UN report is estimating that funding for climate adaptation should be 5 to 10 times greater than what is being currently spent. The climate crisis threatens children's survival and ability to grow and thrive, despite them being least responsible for contributing to it. And child-sensitive climate and environmental policies and plans are required to urgently address the crisis young people and children are facing in terms of access to education, healthcare, safe water, sanitation. We must acknowledge children's vulnerabilities to climate change and environmental degradation, and while recognizing the important role that young people can play in influencing and accelerating climate action. The youth are already making their voices heard. They have spoken up during COP. However, countries, governments, decision makers must empower the young people so that their stories, concerns, and demands can be disseminated at the highest levels. And the new generation, as we know, must continue to fight for climate justice because there is no other way. The onus is on them, but the onus is also on us. Thank you.
Hi, this is Intikab Rauf, a resident of Qatar and a climate journalist and activist. I have participated in 6 COPs previously and recently took part in COP26 in Glasgow, UK. The heads of state and government, as well as the delegates who attended the COP26 in Glasgow, UK, brought a keen perception of the seriousness of the world's climate crisis, as well as the urgency to live up to the historic responsibility of bringing the world on a road to tackle this increasing risk. The importance of addressing adaptation is even more apparent in countries that are currently being impacted by climate change. In addition to the obvious loss of human lives and ecosystems, adaptation will also mean that less resources will be available to protect those who are already living in poverty. I can see a significant change is already underway, and it must accelerate in all sectors of the economy and society in order to achieve the Paris Agreement goals and avoid the worst impacts of climate change. One major example is coal, which needs to be phased out at a pace more than 5 times faster than at present. Earth Lanka and My Climate Action Qatar, a group of young climate activists based in Qatar to promote awareness on climate change to communities in Doha with various activities. I would like to share a quote: "The world, the whole world has to act. To make the world sustainable, we need to think and act for the future we want. It is not about certain country, it is about everyone. We can choose to live in a way that improves the climate, such as reducing the use of plastic items in our daily life. Every human being on the face of the earth has a duty to improve the climate and reduce carbon emissions where possible and become a responsible citizen. As you know, we don't have a planet B." Thank you, guys.
I work as a research officer in the Gobikas Institute. My work includes research in climate science, interfaced with climate policy, addressing loss and damage, climate finance, and also and gender issues. I went to COP26 in Glasgow as an observer, and this was my first COP, though I have been following the climate change issues since I started as a climate activist in 2013. This COP26 with the pledges from the parties that was far from enough to cut their carbon emission to limit global warming to a safer 1.5 degrees Celsius was especially not what we expected in terms of loss and damage, adaptation finance, and the issues that developing countries like Nepal are trying to push. So I'm guessing the issues of loss and damage from extreme climatic events will be a huge concern in coming years for countries like Nepal when the climate crisis will get severe. So this year in COP26, climate vulnerable countries tried to create a new facility specially for loss and damage, but instead it was settled on creating a new dialogue to discuss the possible arrangement for loss and damage financing. So the developed countries have always resisted the proper negotiation and outcomes for the loss and damage topic since the beginning. And 6 years after the Paris Agreement, developing countries are still fighting for the agenda of loss and damage to be taken seriously. So this time it was also agreed that Santiago Network on Loss and Damage, which was established at COP25, will now be an operation and funded for the technical assistance that the developed countries might need to address loss and damage effectively. But the real need here is the finance and not just a bare technical guide to cope and deal with the climate crisis. So this is frustrating for the developing and vulnerable countries that are already facing and dealing with the effects of climate change with limited resources and capacity. However, the negotiators from developing countries, as the CSOs and the climate activists from the Global South, have tried to bring the topic on center stage through advocacy, campaigns, protests throughout the 2 weeks of COP26. The first draft of a decision text in COP26 has vaguely stressed the need to provide enhanced support for loss and damage. However, it doesn't give any specific process or mechanism for the funding. The good thing though that happened in COP26 is Scotland and Belgium pledged $2 and $1 million respectively to support a loss and damage in few countries, and also few other philanthropic agencies pledged similar amount. So this is a welcoming initiation and a leadership step taken by these countries. However, barely enough to address the crisis and not quick enough by other countries. So the more delayed it gets, the vulnerable countries will have to carry the added burden themselves, which will break their back. So we are said to be hopeful, but the climate crisis is not an abstract concept. It's already happening and it's hitting the vulnerable groups hardest. So it should really be treated as an emergency that it is by the developed countries' negotiators. I don't have any specific plans for the next COP27. But I am determined to engage more in science policy research, especially on climate-induced loss and damage, climate finance, and gender issues, and also keep what I am doing, keep being the climate activist and raising my voice wherever and however I can to demand for climate justice, because clearly only COP is not going to save us, so we need some collective action in our own place to tackle with this issue and together with the Global South.
Thank you for having me on this podcast. My name is Aziz Tobi Abubakar and I'm a 23-year-old young professional from Nigeria. I had the opportunity to attend COP26 in person in Glasgow, and it was an opportunity for me to amplify the voices of the unheard young people who are the most vulnerable and most affected by the climate crisis, especially in Africa. I personally think that the issue or the topic around loss and damage wasn't properly covered in COP26, and this is based on the outcome of the Glasgow Climate Pact that was released. And also, I also do think that, to be honest, that there weren't quite a lot of country decisions made that could help to ultimately address all the needs and demands presented at COP26. During my time there, I think that even there is an issue of inclusion, because I got to experience how the most vulnerable and the most affected people we're left out of the decision and policy making process. We're left out of negotiations, and this, they are very key really, because the people that end up coming up with these documents might have not experienced the climate crisis to the extent of someone who is very, very vulnerable to it and would not properly or effectively address or cover the issue of loss and damage, of adaptation and resilience, and other related issues. So I really think that while this is progress, I still think that we could do a lot more, and that everything that were covered at all the decisions and concrete decisions made at COP26 cannot effectively address all the needs and demands presented. The progress in terms of marine life protection and afforestation, and also groundbreaking methane emissions cut down. But while all of these are progress, I still think that we could do more, that those were just stepping stones, and that we could do more in terms of like advocating and ensuring that the most vulnerable people's voices are heard. Also, I also do think that the failures in terms of negotiation, like I've mentioned earlier, is around young people not being heard, and the fact that we were not allowed into certain negotiation rooms, which already makes this a failure on their side. I think that young people should be allowed to negotiate and not just maybe be sidelined or sought. So I think that it's very important that we have young people who have negotiating power. We should be able to have a seat in the room and not just kicked out, because I had the experience of not even being allowed to enter into a negotiation room due to the kind of badge I did have, which I feel wasn't great. So yeah, this is what I would like to share, and I'm really looking forward to COP27 in Egypt.
Thank you so much, Angela, Lamia, Arati, Prakash, Intikab, and Irfan, for sharing your wonderful stories with us. There has always been discussions under the theme of loss and damage during the COP event. At the same time, it is obvious that the issues of loss and damage due to extreme events and climate change will be increased and be a serious matter of concern in the nearby future. These discussions under the theme of loss and damage have not yet been the center of discussion. This year as well, the issue of loss and damage has been covered but not completely addressed, since many things are yet to be covered. The discussions made this year at COP are not able to meet the present day needs, but has been a stepping stone. There has been limited participation of young people, where their voices has been undermined by the others. It has been decided that the Santiago Network on Loss and Damage, developed during the COP25, will now be in operation. In addition, the developing countries might need funding, technical assistance to implement the decisions made. There is no any specific mechanism for loss and damage like that of the others. The delay in addressing these issues is adding the burden over the vulnerable communities. The matters of loss and damage are to be treated as emergency. Moreover, this year Scotland has also allocated the Loss and Damage Fund to tackle the increasing disasters and extreme events. All of us hope that everyone living in different parts of the world will have to face the consequences of loss and damage. For this, we will need efforts from everyone all around at all levels. Now, with this, we have come to the end of our today's episode on COP26 outcomes and the way forward. Once again, thank you everyone for sharing your valuable stories with us. We hope that this session has been informative to all our listeners as well. We will be back with our next episode in the series very shortly. Until then, stay safe and start acting green. Bye-bye. Keep listening to Radio and Youth Podcast.